This is Economics for Entrepreneurs, the podcast where we apply the principles of economics to help you start, grow, and manage your business. Here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Have you ever noticed that the price per ounce of a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi-Cola varies wildly, depending on the time and place you're buying it or consuming it? In the supermarket, you can buy a 12-pack or a 24-pack of 12-ounce cans for less than $20, less than 10 cents an ounce. In a hotel vending machine, the price might be $3 for 20 ounces, or 15 cents an ounce. At the ballpark, it might be $7 for 30 ounces, or over 20 cents an ounce. That's quite a price range. In each case, the consumers who make the purchase have evaluated the offer of the Coca-Cola and decided that there is a sufficient potential value to make the exchange. How can the value of an ounce of Coca-Cola vary so much in the consumer's mind? Well, first, let's not confuse value and price. And that's an error that a lot of people make without thinking too hard about it. Value is 100% in the mind of the consumer. It's actually an emotion, a feeling of satisfaction that things have become better. Economists describe it as a feeling of relief from a felt dissatisfaction. Marketers talk about emotional benefits and the feeling of having met a need. The value comes to the consumer in two stages. First, they evaluate. They consider the can of Coke and evaluate whether it will give them a feeling of relief from their thirst or their craving for something sweet. They also think about considerations of time and place. Do I want that relief now? I'm stood in front of the vending machine in the hotel and thinking about alternative sources of value. I could go to the supermarket and buy my ounces of Coca-Cola at a lower price. But I'd have to leave the hotel, and it's raining. The opportunity cost of the supermarket alternative is high at this moment in time. Another alternative is to go back to my room and drink free water and save a lot of calories, although giving up taste. Firstly, it's an individual matter. Each of us will decide differently based on our own preferences and values. The decision will vary by time and place and might be inconsistent between times. It might vary by context. If I'm with my kids at the ballpark, I might make a different decision than if I'm on my own. I might feel differently in the eighth inning than in the second. If I'm on a diet, I might not buy Coca-Cola for a month and then buy it regularly for the rest of the year. My friend, the yoga teacher and fitness guru, might never buy Coca-Cola. She sees no value in it. Perhaps she perceives a negative value. The economist term for this emotional, idiosyncratic, inconsistent decision-making is subjective value. Subjective means it's 100% inside the consumer's mind. The question of subjective value is fundamental and crucial for entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs sell things, goods or services, but the real job is to get the consumer or the customer to feel value. If that feeling is entirely in their mind, what is the role of the entrepreneur? There's talk of creating value, but is that accurate? Do entrepreneurs create that feeling? There's talk of value added to basic products or services. But if value is a feeling, we can't add it, can't be inherent in the product or service we are selling. Maybe we have to say that firms and entrepreneurs don't create value. If the consumer decides what is value and what is not, then they're the ones who are creating it. The entrepreneurs are rearranging resources in order to make it possible for consumers to find value. Entrepreneurs make a value proposition, something like, I think, I hope, you will experience value from this service I am offering. But the entrepreneur can't be sure. So entrepreneurs are not really creating value, are they? They're making value experienced by the consumer possible, but not certain. This is a really important question. It's super important for entrepreneurs to get the answer right. If you think you're going to create value and you get it wrong, that's business failure. If you get it right, you're a big success. So let's see if we can help you get it right. Here today is Dr. Per Bylund. Per's a fellow of the Mises Institute and assistant professor of entrepreneurship and Record Johnson Professor of Free Enterprise in the School of Entrepreneurship in the Spears School of Business at Oklahoma State. He's an associate fellow of the Ratio Institute in Stockholm. And most importantly, he's thought more deeply and done more research into the question of subjective value and its relationship to entrepreneurship than anyone.
Hey, hello.
Hi, Hunter. Good to be with you.
We explained to listeners in the intro who Carl Menger is, and you apply the theory of subjective value with more clarity than anybody else I know. And that's a good thing because it can really help entrepreneurs get this very tricky subject right and position themselves for business success. So be recognized by their customers as an entrepreneur with a worthwhile value proposition, one that they should respond to. So I thought we'd start in economics and we'd end up in entrepreneurship. So can you please give us the theory of subjective value in business terms?
Well, absolutely. What Menger talks about is simply that value is a satisfaction that you feel from usually consuming a product, but it could really be anything. It's the escape or the relief from some uneasiness that you're feeling. So basically the difference between your state right now and when you're better off by consuming something, that is the value that is created by whatever action you're taking.
And that value exists in the consumer's perception, right? It's in the consumer's mind, that satisfaction.
It's purely in the consumer's mind, yes.
So let's try and make that definition of value helpful to entrepreneurs. If value is in the consumer's mind, it's perceived by them, it's not embedded or inherent in the good or service that they're consuming, then it seems to me that expressions like entrepreneurs create value, or in the area of service thinking, there's been a lot of language like we co-create value with consumers, but maybe we don't even do that. The consumer determines value. What do the entrepreneurs do in terms of value?
Well, I'd like to think of entrepreneurs as facilitators of value. So they provide basically the means for the consumer to experience this value or this satisfaction, to provide them with a better state in their life, to become better off. That's basically what they do. So I think in from an entrepreneurship point of view, I think many entrepreneurs are familiar with how they produce a product and they try to talk to the consumer and show the consumer the product and how it can be used. But the consumer might have a different idea of how to use the product. It happens quite often that entrepreneurs believe that their product is satisfying a specific want, but the consumer sees it differently. So it can be a successful business, even though what you produced is not at all what you thought that you produced. It's not in the good itself. It's purely in how the customer or consumers perceives it.
And so an entrepreneur's empathy with the consumer, understanding how the consumer gets value, is an important part of the value proposition.
Absolutely. And I think most entrepreneurship tools that are out there really stress that the customer is sort of sovereign and the customer decides whether something is valuable or not, even though they don't necessarily stress that value is subjective, which we're doing here. But understanding that if the consumer decides, the consumer determines, the consumer is the final arbiter of whether you have produced something that is useful to them at all. Doing that means that you have to place yourself in the consumer's shoes in order to understand what they might actually want or what they might actually value.
Yeah, and that can change. The consumer's perception of value can change. You and I were talking about the food industry the other day and how the consumer's perception of what is food value to them is changing. And now they're looking for more transparency about where the ingredients come from and less toxic ingredients or ingredients with long chemical names, and therefore the entrepreneur has to respond to that, has to change maybe his production process and where he sources his food and those kinds of things. So the consumer is a changing value perceiver.
Absolutely, and it can change. I mean, sometimes we talk about the whim of consumers, that you don't really know what causes someone to change their mind, but it happens all the time. And it's easy to see that in terms of food, that if you're really, really hungry, if you're starving, it doesn't matter all that much what type of food there is. What you need is basically calories, and you would go for whatever is closest, or whatever is cheapest, or whatever there is. Whereas the more recent development is towards overall holistic health, which is a different problem, but it doesn't have to be that something sort of exogenously from the outside affects us. It can also be just that we change our minds. We suddenly feel for something different, and then we choose a completely different path. So you can't really rely on a consumer to always want your type of product just because they wanted it before. They can completely change their minds, and it can be a total surprise to you.
Yeah, Dr. Christina Melle talks about the evolution of consumer food preferences as a social conversation that is going on between them. And they're talking about new diets and new recipes and new uses for olive oil and that kind of thing. And the entrepreneur has to be plugged into that, has to be able to hear that social conversation. Is that one way to think about it?
I think that is a good way of thinking about it. I mean, it's not only about being part of the conversation and listening to the conversation, but it's really about imagining where the conversation is leading. Because production always takes time, too. So you can't really be ready instantaneously. So you have to predict, in a sense, where this conversation might go and understand. I mean, it goes back to empathy, like you mentioned before, that if you really understand the consumer from the consumer's point of view, what it is like to be that consumer, then you can sort of see where they're heading, what direction they're going, and possibly even why. And then you can position your offering in such a way that it meets the consumer where the consumer is when you finally have that good or service ready.
But that's still an act of imagination, right? Because the consumer, the future of the consumer is uncertain to us, and we don't know where the consumer is going. We have to sort of imagine that future, and the entrepreneur who's good at that imagination is the one who's more successful.
Yes, it is about imagination. It's also about judgment and imagination. Then we think about creation and creativity and things like that. And it seems almost like it's open-ended completely. And I don't think it is. For entrepreneurs and consumers, when you imagine where the consumer is heading, the more you can empathize with the consumer, the more you understand in what direction they're heading. So sort of directed or limited imagination, because you already know in what direction you need to imagine their future wants and needs.
And we also talked about the consumer's evolving need has to be reflected in the production chain. It's got to change the capital structure. So if I'm an entrepreneur, I spot that dissatisfaction that the consumer has, or I imagine where the consumer is going some point in the future, I've got to create a new production chain to bring the new solution to them. You talk in your book, The New Theory of the Firm, The Problem of Production, a subtitle, A New Theory of the Firm, about creating new specializations. The entrepreneur has to do that in order to create this new solution for the consumer. Can you talk about the new specializations a little bit?
Well, absolutely. It's really about being innovative in how you produce something. And in a sense, what I usually say to my students and so forth is that the value is purely in the mind of the consumer, and that's where we started out. The price is really a function of the value that the consumer sees. So as an entrepreneur, you need to figure out what type of price you can charge. But the real challenge is to figure out the cost that is necessary to produce the product or service. So what that means is figuring out the best way of producing something from the point of view of consumers, so to provide them with a value but keep the costs down. And creating new specializations means being innovative in terms of the cost or really the production process and whatever supply chain is necessary. And what I talk about in my book is that if it's very innovative, it simply means that you cannot contract with existing entities and existing entrepreneurs out there already to buy the parts and buy the services necessary to produce. Instead, you need to develop those in-house. And that's how I define a firm, economically speaking.
So in our subjective, value-centered logic, the customer, the consumer, and the way you've described really starts to determine what is in the production chain. They determine what ingredients are used, what factories are used, what production techniques are used. They're really determining the production chain.
Absolutely. What entrepreneurs need to do is facilitate the value for consumers by basically second guessing how to use all the resources that are out there. And entrepreneurs don't do that only individually, even though they of course do that, but they also do that as an aggregate or in abstract, that all entrepreneurs together try to second guess where consumers are going so that they can satisfy their wants in the future, in the near future and the long-term future.
The idea of the what I'm calling the value dominant thinking is how entrepreneurs can win. So they understand subjective value. They try to imagine where that subjective value mentality is going to take the consumer in the future. They bring these new capital structures into production, these new recipes and these new techniques and these new specializations. So that's seems like it's a form of thinking. It's consumer first, and how do I translate that back into production?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the thinking that you need as an entrepreneur in order to avoid many mistakes. Most entrepreneurs fail most of the time. And I think that is simply because they do not empathize with the consumer, and they do not recognize that what they're doing is really trying to facilitate value for someone else, someone who is sovereign in how they choose to consume the product and what they think about it.
Another economic theory about what the entrepreneur does in this pursuit of value is create and share new information. So we can take that literally. I discover some new information about the consumer's mindset. I install that into my production chain. I produce this new solution. I've got to take that new information to other entrepreneurs, other suppliers, and so on, say, this is the new value I'm trying to create. And I've got to take that information back to the consumer. I've heard your dissatisfaction. I have this new solution, which you didn't know about before. So is that helpful for entrepreneurs as to think of themselves as creators of new and potentially valuable information?
I think it might be, especially new information for consumers. New information in production that would basically be the price system and how finding new uses for existing resources will change the price structure of the market and the prices that affect you as an individual entrepreneur and all the other entrepreneurs as well. But if thinking about it in terms of providing consumers with information for how they can be better off, how they can satisfy wants that and how they can scratch the itches that they have, basically. That's one way of thinking about it. And you provide this information by providing a good or a service, and also providing a story or a narrative about that good or service to help them realize what the actual value is.
And can I take that information process to advertising and promotion and marketing? In our venture capital fund, we often encounter new products and new ideas where all of the costs of production go into the technology, and there's no money left over for marketing. They have the problem that they don't have any marketing funds left because they've concentrated all of their investment in production of the technology. And yet you need to deliver that narrative to the consumer. So we always tell them, hey, marketing is not an option. Marketing is an inherent part of going to market, and that's bringing the new information to the consumer. Do you have a point of view about that?
Well, absolutely. I see advertising as a way of informing the consumer of what alternatives are out there, and that you have an alternative to them, and how you think that they will be able to use something. So when you tell that story about your product or service, what you're really doing is trying to help the consumer not only to realize that your good is out there, but that there's an opportunity for them to become better off, to feel better with themselves or be more healthy or whatever value they're trying to attain. But you need to inform them of all these different options. And very often entrepreneurs need to lead the way and be pioneers. And I mean, a common quote of Henry Ford's, even though he apparently never said it, is that if he had asked his consumers or customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. And that's obviously not what he wanted to provide with them. And the need that he saw, or the want that he wanted to satisfy was better transportation, more reliable transportation, cheaper transportation. And he had a different vision for how he could provide this. It was not faster horses, however you might think of producing those. I don't know. but providing them with an automobile instead, an affordable automobile, provided them with much greater value than the consumer could imagine. So, I mean, the information is not simply telling them about the product is here, but you need to tell the story, the narrative of what value does this bring to your life. And that is what advertising does really well. I don't think it's about tricking the consumer, even though there might be a fair amount of that as well. But it's about telling the story in such a way that the consumer recognizes that, oh yeah, there is value for me here in this product by using it in this particular way, or adding it to my life in this circumstance or whatever it is, but helping them to realize this value that is available now.
But also a further development of that in marketing is that marketing can translate the subjective value into something we call an emotional benefit. You will feel better as a result of this experience. So in the automobile analogy, you'll feel safer, or you'll feel less frustrated because you got there faster, or you'll feel more comfortable. And in the food analogy, you'll feel better about feeding your family. You'll feel better about feeding yourself. So one way for entrepreneurs to think about subjective value, certainly from a marketing standpoint, is the creation of the emotional benefit.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is what Menger already recognized in the 1870s when he was talking about satisfying a want, and that value itself is not in dollars and cents, and it's not in the good itself. It's in experiencing that relief from uneasiness, basically. And that is the emotional component that you're talking about, that you feel better about something, that you experience this better feeling. That's the value itself.
Right. And if the consumer experiences some of that good feeling, but it could have been even better, that's sort of feedback that you can put into the reaction, right? Or into the entrepreneurial reaction. You can try to make them feel even better if you can get that feedback.
Absolutely. And that again goes back to empathizing with the consumer and understanding who they are, and in what type of life they're leading, and what type of life they want to lead, and really figuring out what type of person is this, and where are they heading, and what would make them feel good. And as in the case with Henry Ford, it might not be something that they are actually asking for, but it might be something that still helps them in their everyday lives in a way that they couldn't imagine.
And this idea of continuous dynamism, the consumer's always changing, the entrepreneur's always trying to make an adjustment that meets their needs. They go to the market. By the time the consumer has received the new offering, they may have changed. You've got to take the feedback. How should entrepreneurs think about that continuous dynamism, and how should they set themselves up to be able to take advantage of it, as opposed to be rolled over by it?
Well, I think it comes down to two things, really. One is the empathy and understanding who the consumer is and where they might be heading. The other is really understanding the economy and how the economy might evolve. That's both reading up on where is technology right now, where is technology heading, but also trying to figure out where are the other entrepreneurs that I might be competing with, where are they heading, and what types of wants of my consumer are they trying to satisfy, and in what manner? Because it's really about positioning the value that you will provide with all the other values that are provided by other entrepreneurs in the future, and making sure that it's valuable enough for the consumer, so the consumer chooses to actually act on and thereby buying your product.
So the entrepreneur has to enable value, facilitate value, I think you said, by solving the consumer want, maybe better than it's been solved before, better than any competitor solves it. But also, see, you've said that I have to solve the consumer's problem so that they'll accept my value proposition, as opposed to spending their money on something else entirely, solving a different want, which is a higher priority to them. Can the entrepreneur figure that out as well, that the problem that the consumer wants to solve another want rather than the one that I'm addressing?
Yes, absolutely. And in a sense, any entrepreneur, I think, would know this, that what they're competing for is really the consumer's dollars. It's not really competing with whoever is producing a similar good, but just making sure that the consumer wants to make that purchase and go through with the exchange. That's what is important. I mean, and number one is to make sure that you provide real value in the eyes of that consumer. So that consumer recognizes the value. And that goes back to the marketing and everything that you mentioned before, that if you can tell a story about your product so that the consumer recognizes that, wow, there's huge value in this product or this service, I just need this product, then you won most of the battle. And then, of course, you need to position your value so that it is higher than and in the right place and at the right time compared to other values that are offered to consumers. Because in this day and age, in the way our economies work today, there are plenty of options available for consumers. So what you're doing is really trying to position the value that you're providing so that it stands out in the market overall.
Yeah, I'm going to introduce another complication for the entrepreneur, which is the time and place and the channel. So to use an example that you've illustrated in various places, if I love hot dogs and I'm in a retailer where hot dogs are on offer and only hot dogs, that's great. I'll take it. If I'm hungry at the moment, I'd love a hot dog. But I really prefer burgers. And if I'm a place where there's a choice between a hot dog and a burger, I'm going to take the burger. So the context of what's available and at what time and where I am and how I'm feeling also changes the subjective value.
Absolutely. And that again comes down to the positioning of the value that you're offering, making sure that you are in a place. I mean, we talk about strategic positioning and things like that, which is try to be in a market where you don't have much competition, trying to provide something unique in that market segment or in that geographical location or at that time, whatever it is, trying to figure that out. But that is also goes back to understanding the two sides of the economy, one side being the consumer's appreciation for what you're doing, the value that they feel, empathizing with the consumer. The other side is to figure out, okay, what are all the other entrepreneurs doing? How are they trying to satisfy this consumer's different wants as well? And then position what you're doing with respect to both.
Is this a theory of subjective value and the value dominant logic we've talked about, does this apply also in B2B situations where I'm not selling to the consumer, I'm trying to sell my product to the buyer at Whole Foods or the procurement agent at the hospital or some other B2B transaction? Do we follow the same principles?
Yes, absolutely, we do. But indirectly, I would say, in the sense that if you are supplying a business that in turn is supplying consumers. The way you sell it to that business is to point out how this benefits their customer. So value is really only in the consumption of a good or service. If you are supplying a business that in turn produces for the consumer, what that means is that you have to make sure that that business that you're selling to understands how you're contributing to the value that they are in turn providing consumers.
When you teach entrepreneurship and you take students through this kind of value logic process, what do you find are the most difficult parts for them to internalize and appreciate and understand?
The first thing is probably what is subjective value to begin with, because we are sort of taught or mistaught to understand value in terms of dollars and cents, and that's not what we're talking about. That's how you calculate your profit as a business, but it's not actual value. Value is the experience of the consumer. So that's the first difficulty in teaching this. The other is how production and value really go different directions. So you start by producing something, and obviously you have a cost first, and then you have the good, and then you put a price tag on it, and then the customer buys or doesn't buy it. If he buys it, there's some value in it. But the reason that you're doing all of this and the reason it works out is because there is value in what is being produced. And your job is not really to produce a good that might be valuable, but it is to figure out what is the value, how can you satisfy this, and then choose the cost of it. So the reason that your business has a market value, so to speak, the reason that your machines have a value, the reason that the labor invested in your business has value is because they contribute to the consumer's experience. So value starts with the consumption and then sort of trickles up or moves backward into production. So if you cannot complete the production process, everything you've done is completely worthless in terms of value. If you complete it and the consumer is not interested in buying, then there is no value in it. If the consumer is only interested in buying at a price that is lower than your per item cost, that means that you have failed. And we know this, of course, because you're suffering a loss, but it also means that you have failed in figuring out what the value is, and you have failed in picking a production process that is not fit for the value that you're trying to help the consumers create.
Yeah, and I find in dealing with small business owners and entrepreneurs, it's really, really hard for them sometimes to get to that end, consumer value, and work their way backwards. I have a good friend who's in the window coverings business, and he installs those in large office buildings. So his contract is 200 window coverings that have to fit perfectly, and the remote control has to work, and so on like that. So he understands that there's consumer value ultimately in sitting in that office and being shaded from the sun, and it looks good, and the remote controls work. But it's so easy for them to get so easy for him to get locked up into the negotiation process with his B2B customer and think about the production chain, as you say, how to train people to install it well. And it's quite hard for them to be always thinking about, am I creating or helping to create or facilitate consumer value here? So I guess it's training and education and repetition.
Yes, it is. And it's also, I mean, even if you're a supplier to another business, think about who their customers are. Who is the ultimate consumer? Maybe hang out with the consumer. I mean, seek them up. Try to figure out who they are and what situation they're in. And then that means that you're more informed when you negotiate with the buyers of your product. And as for your friend, there's going to be negotiations because everybody wants to keep their costs really low. Ultimately, in order to make sure that the consumer gets value at a price that provides you with a profit that is still low enough for the consumer to be much better off. I mean, if you know the value that you are actually contributing to this, to your customer's production, there is no need to haggle about details anymore, because then you can provide a huge value for their customer and set your price and choose your cost structure at the much lower, so that you can get a profit out of it anyway.
Well, that's great practical advice, Per. You can, if you're a B2B business and supplier, you can create value for your business-to-business customer by going and sitting in the chair or experiencing the life of the end consumer and bring that knowledge, that information, that empathy back to your business-to-business customer as part of your value proposition to your customer.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think they teach that in business school very much.
I don't think they do either, no.
So maybe what we should be thinking about is here at Economics for Entrepreneurs is a business seminar for business executives on how to deal with subjective value and how to plug that into their entrepreneurial recipe.
That's a very good idea, actually, and to make sure that entrepreneurs understand what they're actually doing. It is production, that is everyday activities that they're involved in, but it's production for a specific purpose, and that is to facilitate value for the consumer. And I think many entrepreneurs miss that point, or they think about it a little wrong by thinking in terms of dollars and cents and not the experience or the appreciation or the better life that you provide the consumer.
Right. That's a real insight, I think. And maybe the language has to change for business people. You know, we talk about subjective value and maybe they can embrace that, but we talk about the value of capital goods being imputed from the subjective value that the consumer experiences. That's a bit more difficult language. So maybe we've got to dress it up in some terms that are easier for the business people to consume.
That's probably right, yes.
Yeah. So maybe that's one of our jobs at Economics for Entrepreneurs. We can work on the vocabulary. Well, good, Per. Thanks again. And I think this idea of value dominant logic, where your entire thinking chain has to start at the consumer, understand what subjective value is to them, and then work your way backwards from that to produce a solution, take it back to the marketplace and inform them, by which time they may have changed. That's a good construct for people to follow. So maybe you can summarize that as a way of thinking, a discipline of thinking for us.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, always start with what would make you feel better using your product. That's a good start. And then imagine who would feel most better from your product. And that's probably who your first customer should be. That person who would be so much better off than anybody else from your product or service. And then, of course, tweak your product or service to that person. And then make sure that your costs of production are much lower than the price that you think that you can charge.
Yeah. So always try to live inside the mind of the consumer. That's maybe a summary of the message. And it's really hard for business people to do that because they've got so much on their mind and they've got so much focus on other parts of the production chain. But it's a good motto to hang over your door, perhaps.
Absolutely. And especially as an entrepreneur, when you're starting a new business, that's where you start thinking about the business. It takes a lot of effort and cost to change a business that was started on shaky grounds. But when you're starting a new business, you need to start with the consumer and who the first consumer to sell to must be. Well, that's following the value for the consumer. You need to think about it from the consumer's perspective and see it through their eyes, basically.
So that's a piece of language. I don't have a new idea for a new business. I've got the identification of a consumer need I think I can create a new solution for. That's the first step.
Absolutely. Yes.
Good. Okay. Let's leave it there. So subjective value, don't be scared by the term, but it's understanding the mind of the consumer and empathetically diagnosing that value in the consumer's head so you can create a solution for it. Per, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Hunter.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.